everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, Democrat Gazette senior editor, and boy, is this going to be a fun show. You know, we do this in-depth public policy stuff sometimes. We're going to be talking wine and food on this show. This is great. I know we're not on camera, but I can assure you this is going to be a good time. We have with us today Ken Lipsmeyer. He is the maitre d' of Red Oak, which is the finest of fine dining in Arkansas at Saracen Casino Resort. He is a wine expert and also a return guest and the boss, if you will, Carlton Saffa, Chief Market Officer of Saracen Casino Resort. Carlton, thank you for joining us a couple of weeks ago, but welcome back. Ken's going to play the lead role, but I wanted to get you in here because you can set the stage by telling me who Ken Lipsmeyer is and why he's important to Arkansas.
Where to begin? First of all, I'm delighted to be back. And, you know, you and I talked last time we spoke about how blackjack is 21 and slot machines. And yeah, a casino can define itself with excellence and hospitality. I can think of no better example of the 1,100 folks that I get to work with, of the best of the best, than Ken. You're going to have to drag it out of him. I know he's sitting right next to me. He's humble. But Ken's experience is unprecedented in this space. The way I would describe it is this. There are a lot of people that know a lot about their field, whether it's cigars or bourbon or wine or whatever it may be. But to be able to be an absolute master at what you're doing and still be approachable is an amazing skill. I would say in a weird parallel, it would almost be like my friend Lowry Barnes, who's the best there is at orthopedics. But Lowry is just a good guy.
Absolutely. You know, down to earth Arkansan.
And I know it's weird that we're talking about wine and food, but that's Ken. He's an Arkansan, yeah, and he's down to earth. The last thing I'll say, and then we'll get to Ken, I use the cigar comparison because I love to smoke cigars. Mm-hmm. And you walk into a snooty cigar shop, and they are snooty.
Oh, man.
My favorite cigar shop in the whole world is on South University. And my buddy Greg, who knows more about cigars than almost anybody you will ever meet in the business, is wearing scrubs and a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah,
and
he can go, have to be snooty.
He can go as deep as you want into the conversation about tobacco, but he makes it approachable and he makes it fun. There's no one in our state's history with the credentials in wine that Ken has. And there's no one in our state that you can go as deep or as fun or both than Ken. And I am so proud to get to work with him because he is the best of the best, and he is the face of what we hire at Saracen to put the best out for our customers.
Well, Ken, welcome. Good to have you on the podcast. I want to back up a little bit. How on earth did you get into this area? That would be my first question. Yeah. Just a quick version of your career journey, if you will.
Well, I'm actually from Arkansas, from Perry County, to be exact.
From Perry County, wow. Perry County, from the hills.
A big wine country, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've always thought of the Washita Mountains, I think of wine.
Moonshine.
Yeah, actually, I think of moonshine, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I went to school in Europe and ended up harvesting grapes with a bunch of students, and that was my introduction to wine.
Wow.
And absolutely fell in love with it.
How did you get to Europe? I'm just a newspaperman in me going to ask a lot of questions.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I finagled myself into Europe. You know, I was going to school in the United States and went to Europe with a bunch of students on a summer program.
Okay.
And just fell in love with it and called my mom. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to stay for a little while longer. And then Christmas came around. I said, I think I'll stay till the spring semester. And it just kind of stretched over to me about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, right.
And my mother's like, he's never coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way, she was kind of right. It took me a while. I ended up in New York after that and on a cruise ship for a while. And back here in Little Rock, early 2000s, yeah. So, and I left.
So you came back to Arkansas in the early 2000s, yeah.
And it was never my intention to leave Arkansas. I love Arkansas. And growing up, I thought I'd be a farmer.
Yeah.
And my approach to wine, by the way, is as a farmer.
Is that of a farmer.
It is true. And I think that's the way you really have to approach wine. And I think that's the reason why many Arkansans fall in love with wine. is because everyone's grown the perfect tomato, right? And understand.
Oh, absolutely. We understand the earth in Arkansas, if you will. Yeah.
And my approach to teaching about wine is to focus on what we know. Everyone needs to have a common reality when it comes to teaching. And so we start with what everyone knows, and everybody knows how to grow tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a peach tree. And so we talk about how those things are grown and developed and flavor is created. And we then apply that to wine. And then people get it. And learning about wine in the end of the day is just words, is figuring out what the words mean. It's hard because they're all in foreign languages. But once you figure out what the words mean, then actually the lights start coming on and you enjoy it a great deal.
Hey, Rex, I got to say this. You know the old adage that those who can't teach, he's the exception that proves that wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. if you run into a sommelier from Arkansas, it's highly likely that they've been trained by Ken.
Yeah.
So, but he's the exception to the rule. He can do it and he can teach it.
Yeah. Did you first get into wine working at a restaurant? Is that where you got your start?
Or well, it was kind of the opposite for me. When I was in school, I don't know, I guess I thought I was going to go work for the State Department, you know, so I could travel.
Oh, yeah.
My whole life, I've always been really interested in travel and discovery. Then I got into the wine by harvesting grapes in Hungary.
Okay.
And it just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah.
Before I left Europe, I was in the harvest in Austria, Bordeaux, Burgundy, Champagne, Italy. I mean, I just
fascinating.
Got all over the place and just absolutely snowballed into a career for me. And when I came back to the United States, that's how I got into the wine trade, working with a restaurant in Houston, Texas called Tony's, which at the time was the top restaurant in the entire state of Texas. And that was a lot of fun and selling very, very high-end wines. And then I worked on a cruise ship where I was selling very cheap wines.
Ah, yeah.
And that was a difficult learning curve for me, learning how to buy wines that were like $5 a bottle. You know, it was like totally foreign to me. And so I had to retrain myself to
So you've been at every level, in other words.
Every level, yeah. And
from the hundreds of dollars. You know, I am, and I think you will probably agree, I'm like a lot of Arkansans. I can quickly tell a $100 bottle of wine from a $10 bottle of wine. I can tell you that.
Yep.
I don't think my palate is refined enough, Ken, though, to tell you a $500 bottle of wine from a $100 bottle of wine.
Well, you know, in that case, I think that a $30 Rolex these days tells time just as good as a $100,000, a $30 Timex.
Timex, tells
good to time as a $100,000 Rolex. You don't buy a $100,000 Rolex because it tells time, you know, it makes a statement, right?
Yeah.
Well, wine's a little different. In fact, we have wine here in front of us that I brought. That kind of.
I told you this was a good show. None of those of you listening, but those of us doing it, we've got wine here.
Yeah. And this wine here is from Alsace. It's a little place in France that I absolutely love, by a family that's been producing wine for several generations, going back to at least the 1700s on a small plot of land, not unlike an Arkansas farm family, and growing crops. And at the end of the day, that's what this is. This is a crop. And they're producing a wine here that is unique in the world. It's from a very unique place, and it produces a very unique style of wine, which you're about to experience. And this is among the great wines of the world. This is something called Selection Grand Noble. And these are very rare wines, and this one here happens to be about 35 years old. And it shows what the potential is for this agricultural product, that you could bottle this in the 1990s, from vines that were 100 years old in the 1990s.
Oh, wow.
And then 30 years later, you're opening it up to see what happened in that vintage, in that year. And it's a
1994, wine. By the way. So we just opened a 32-year-old wine.
Here you go. So right.
Yeah.
But it's Saracen, that's how we do it.
I'm impressed already. Go ahead, though. Right. I just had to let our listeners know. This is a 32-year-old bottle of wine we just opened here.
And it's very special. But this wine didn't cost $1,000. I mean, it's expensive. I'm not going to lie. It's an expensive wine. I think I paid $100 for it.
Mm.
But you have a 30-year-old wine grown in a very special place by one of the great producers of Alsace for $100. But this wine makes a statement. It's very good. Anyone's going to enjoy it. It has wide appeal. but also it has really good application for the culinary. Whether you're going to have it with a piece of blue cheese, a foie gras, or dessert, this wine is very versatile. But you're going to notice immediately that this wine is very intense, has a great deal of tension, and has a great deal of character, which sets it apart from your grocery store wine.
Mm-hmm. If you caught what he said, though, most wine snobs start talking about hints of leather and notes of pepper.
Oh, yeah. And I'm a writer. A lot of that's creative writing.
Right? There's an essence of bergamot. He just made this approachable and compared it to a crop.
An Arkansas farm? Yeah.
That is kin to a tea. He could do this bottle for 2 hours. I know we don't have 2 hours, but you just explained that in a way that everyone can understand, and you made it intentionally approachable. This is why I love Ken, and this is why Ken works with us, because he can go as deep as you want on this wine, but he doesn't do it with essence of lavender.
Yeah.
Hints of baseball glove or whatever exactly. Nonsense they say.
Exactly. So, Carlton, and I'll come back to you again in a second. So, Carlton, is the best bet if I'm coming to a really nice night of dinner at Red Oak, multi-courses, I want a wine that pairs with each course, just to let Ken take over, basically?
Yeah, honestly, and I might even argue with food the same thing, holler at them and just say, feed me, but let Ken take over. Look, we've got incredible wine by the glass. I was in there with my wife a couple of weeks ago, and she was so tickled. It's only the second time in my life I've ever seen Dom Perignon by the glass.
Mm.
And Ken has it with his caviar menu, which is 3 or 4 types of caviar, plus spoonbill.
Oh, wow.
We got to have the Delta caviar.
Got to have the Arkansas stuff, yes.
But Dom by the glass, I've only ever seen it once at one other place.
By the way, there is a listing for freshwater Arkansas caviar in the Encyclopedia of Arkansas. I wrote that entry.
Oh, yeah.
Ken, just so you know, yeah. Well, you're teaching others.
Just ask it, Ken.
Yeah. And
we challenged him with crazy pairings, smoked elk and the like.
I mean, uh-huh.
Do it. But you never hit it as a snob. You make it approachable and fun.
Yeah.
It's my opinion. You have to start where your audience is, right? So the first conversation we're going to have, if you ask me to pick your wine, we're going to ask you what you like. I mean, what have you had that's really good? We're going to try to figure out where your flavor profile is, because there's no point in giving you a $500 bottle of wine if you're not going to like it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We start with where you are, and we try to create an experience for you. Our goal when we give you a bottle of wine or a glass of wine is that you're going to come back. Mm-hmm. So that's our hook, because wine's about discovery. And if you can come to Red Oak and have that experience and that discovery, you're going to come to us for your education on wine so that you see what's out there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, we've hooked you if you come back and you give us the chance to do it again. And we're not going to give you the same wine the second time. Every time you come, you're going to get a different wine.
Different wine,
because
yeah.
Because we want to take you on a journey.
Wow.
But we stay within your budget. We don't want to kill people.
Yeah.
And we typically don't recommend $500 bottle wines unless you're of a particular income group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your average person's going to get a wine, like this that's exceptional and world-class, but it's accessible.
You got a big catalog to choose from.
How many bottles of wine in your wine cellar, roughly?
Well, it's a growing number. Right now, I would say labels, we have about 1,000 labels.
Wow.
That represents about 7,000 bottles.
I can tell you, I've seen the insurance rider, and it's a 7-figure collection, and he's got them stashed all over the place, because remember, we're not even in our full space yet.
That's right. You haven't finished building out yet.
But Wine Spectator's awarded him, and I suspect those awards will just continue to grow.
Yeah.
And we have a new home coming for our wine soon. It's going to be the cellar, and when you come down, make sure we take you to see the cellar.
Oh, I'm going to want to.
It's going to be quite an experience.
Yeah, very, very exciting. Now, you've been with Saracen for how long, Ken?
Well, since the new building started.
Okay.
Right? I wasn't at the annex, but as soon as they got across the street, Todd Gold called me and asked me to help with training over there. And I was actually involved with Quapaw already. And I see you have a book over there with the garden. And
yes.
That picture there, that is a passion flower, which the Quapaw called Maypop. And it's a native plant to Arkansas.
Yeah.
People don't know that passion fruit grows here and wild. And I was researching the lost crops of the Arkansas River Valley, which disappeared about the time that DeSoto made his way through. It wasn't because of DeSoto, it was other things. But I was just fascinated with the diet of the early Americans. And those crops are still maintained by the quapaw.
Absolutely. I mentioned on a previous show that before the casino, the big building, was even open, Carlton took me to Oklahoma. I thought we were just going to see cattle and bison, actually. But, Carlton, I've got to tell you, I was so impressed because we saw everything from a coffee roaster that had been brought in from Haiti to greenhouses to growing herbs, native plants. I mean, the Quapaw Nation really takes this seriously.
Yeah, and I will tell you, we don't have greenhouses at Saracen. I think we may get there. But, you know, what we do have,
cool.
We're on the cusp of, you know, cutting the ribbon on a $600 million capital investment.
Yeah.
Largest single investment in hospitality in the state's history. But once we start growing, we don't stop. So, you know, never say never. I will tell you, we probably have not done as good a job as our friends in Oklahoma at raising our own bees and doing our own honey. Mm-hmm. We've been hyper-focused on getting built and also doing so in every capacity with Arkansas partners where we
yeah,
can.
Yeah.
So, we, you know, we'll get back to nature, but we had to get back to Arkansas first.
Understood.
Well, and I think that's the key to what we're doing is that we try to outsource things to local growers. Because we don't want to be the one to get all the glory. We want local folks to figure out how to sell to us and how to grow unique crops and things like this. So anything that we can do to help the local farmer, that we're all for it.
Wow.
So we don't have to grow it as long as somebody nearby is growing it for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are y'all going to drink that wine?
Yes.
All right. Here we go.
All right. So you have a 30-year-old wine in front of you. And this wine is made from a grape called Gewürztraminer.
Okay.
There's a lot of conversations I could have with you about this wine. It starts with where it's from, and it's from this little place called Alsace.
Yep.
And in the culinary world, Alsace is the center. I'm telling you, if you look at 100 of the greatest chefs in the world, 10 of them came from Alsace.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they have in the water there.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about Alsace and how unique it is from the culinary aspect, or we could look at this name here, Raleigh Gassman. And this is a story about two farm families that got married back in the 60s and started on a path together. So a merging of two families who have been in Alsace for generations.
Yeah.
Or we could look to this particular word here, Oberer Weingarten, which is the vineyard where this wine was produced. One of the exceptional vineyards in the world based on the geology, you know, of ancient times. And in the world of wine, it's geology and climate that come together. So the ground and the surface that makes great wines possible. And in my experience, great wine has always grown at the very edges of where wine can grow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find a place where there's good wine, you go to the very edge of where
the grapes on the edge.
And you find the great wine.
Interesting.
This is a great wine.
Yeah.
And I mentioned, you know, it's astounding. And you're going to find out. So let's...
All right.
First of all, the color.
Listeners, excuse me.
Seeing us, this is a beautiful, almost topaz color because of the age. And then when you smell it, it's just this beautiful perfume.
Oh, yeah.
Just honeyed and almond, roasted hazelnut, maybe.
Oh, you're doing the thing.
I know, but we can relate to that.
Because you're tasting it.
It is honey, yeah.
But what
yeah.
I want you to focus on is the second you put it in your mouth, how your mouth just explodes with mouth watering. Mm-hmm. And that's acidity. And that's the key to a great wine, is that it's retained its acidity.
And that is truly a great wine, yeah.
And then it creates balance.
Yeah.
And you also notice there's a lot of sugar in that wine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the type of wine it is. But it's not sweet. It's balance. You have that balance of acidity, which you can feel it still. And then you have that sweetness that coats your mouth. And then that warmth from the alcohol. It's not high alcohol, but it's enough
yeah.
to balance the wine. And so because of the structure of this wine, it's been able to age for 30 years. But also, this wine will hold up to that smoked elk that Carlton was talking about earlier. You know, elk has that slightly gamey texture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the sugar in this wine will help to balance the iron and the gaminess of that dish, but the smoke itself is the key. That acidity will cut through the smoke, so it's like a topsy-turvy type of thing. You have this wine with that dish, and it's going to swirl like an aria in the opera or something.
Mm.
And those two sounds will reverberate, and that creates a sum that's greater than the parts. And that's the key to a good food and wine pairing. And we want that type of experience with every dish that we serve. So we try to have a pocket wine that we can pull out if you're going to have the elk, or if you're going to have a blue cheese dish, or you're going to have one of the steaks, and each steak is different. We have a different wine expression that we'd like for you to try with that.
Yeah.
But also we go back to the experience of the guests. We have guests that come who have never dined in fine dining before. They've never been in a full service restaurant.
Right.
You know,
right.
We're in the Delta, so we have all levels of experience.
That's a great point.
Yeah. We really feel like we have to have a wine for every single person who walks in the door. And so we're going to start with you. And it could be a sweet red wine from South Africa.
Yeah.
That you're going to like if you're not used to drinking wine. But also, it can go with our foods, our steaks, or our fish, whatever. Yep.
That is a really good wine. Now, you mentioned in developing your wine cellar, and it's going to get bigger, as Carlton said, but you got about 1,000 labels already. I would think that a lot of this is like any other expert. It's about developing relationships. I assume you know people personally at wineries all over the world.
And that's this wine right here, Raleigh Gassman. He's not with us anymore. But his son is Pierre Gassman, and I met Pierre's wife, actually, because Pierre was actually in the vineyard the day that I visited, right? And that's the beautiful thing about working with Saracen. I get to go all over the world.
That's what I was going to say. I assume you travel quite a bit.
That's one of the appeals for me, is to travel around the world and meet these folks and discover their wines and try to bring them back to the state.
And Carlton, and we talked when I had you a couple of weeks ago. I got to bring you back in here. But really not, when you think this part of the country, certainly maybe Vegas with some of the fine restaurants there, but the philosophy at Saracen behind hiring a kin and allowing him to travel all over the world, that's not what I would expect from a casino in Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
That's why we do it.
Yeah.
I wish I had something wittier to say, but that's exactly why we do it.
I mean, you got a guy, he's literally traveling all over the world and getting to know
And he's an Arkansan, mm-hmm. and he's easy to talk to, and he speaks plain English, and he's not a snob, and those are rare in the wine world. He's too humble to tell you. You need to ask him about the Master of Wines program and really drag it out of him. He won't. I can't get it out of him. You can. But he's the most learned wine guy, I would argue, in this history of our state. He works at Saracen. Saracen's primary business is slot machines. Let's make no bones about it.
Yep.
But we can make a statement about the experience you will have with us by having someone like Ken who can tell you about the wine that you're drinking that's 30-something years old that he just happened to have for this morning, right? Mm-hmm. Do more than people expect, and they will be blown away, and they'll come back and see you.
Yeah,
because again, the same Buffalo machines or Cherry machines or, you know, 777 Diamond machines, Blackjack's 21 everywhere, but food and an experience like Ken's, being in the casino business affords us the opportunity to be in the experience business, mm-hmm. and you can differentiate yourself with food, wine, and service, and we always will. That's the difference maker. You come and you win, you had a great time. You come and you don't win, the dinner may make a difference. And I mentioned this earlier, but the reputation of the restaurant became the reputation of the property. And that is largely on the shoulders of Ken and the folks that he works with. We built a billion-dollar brand on being really good at what we do. And I'm not really very good at anything, but I'm thankful that Ken and his crew are, because you developed a reputation for excellence that allowed us to expand our brand and set record quarters, quarter after quarter.
Yeah. So,
well, I have a whole team behind me. I mean, I'm just like one of a team.
And I was going to say, as you come in and people trust you and say, let's pair things and all, you have to be a food expert in addition to a wine expert, right?
Oh, sure. And I've been studying probably my whole life. I mean, it's obsessive. I just love to learn things. And Carlton alluded to the Master Wine Program. I'm a candidate in the Master Wine Program, meaning that I'm working towards it. And it is a long path. It takes years to finish this. And I'm enjoying it. It's just a great deal of fun. But at that level, you're taking what you've already known. So I already have my diploma of wine from the Wine and Spirits Educational Trust in London. and this is the next step for me. And that's another reason why I'm traveling so frequently, because I have to meet producers in every part of the world, and I have to meet all of the industry folks who do different things in the trade. But the key is I also educate, but also meet the public. I'm a wine server, so I'm going to serve wine for people. So I'm at the front edge of that.
Can give some reference to what candidate for Master of Wine means. So that's, that's not something you can get online and get from the, you know, Bahamian University, right?
Like, no, it's a process. It takes a long time just to get accepted. It's a fight to get in. But once you're accepted, then it's a process. And the goal is that you think and you act at the highest level of learning. So, in diploma of wine, you're doing synthesis, but at the master of wine level, you're actually creating. So when you look at policy, public policy, government policy, you look at trade, finance, agriculture, biodynamic agriculture is a big one. The big issue right now, climate change. How is that impacting the world of agriculture, the world of wine? That's what we focus on, is what is going to happen next.
How many folks in the South have this sort of credential?
Oh, well, in the South, there's a couple in the South, right, broadly. So Atlanta, New Orleans, and Texas, if you count Texas as the South.
I don't know. East Texas is, yes. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Right.
I like that argument. My wife's a Texan. I like that argument. Where does the South end?
Yeah. I'd say probably around Longview or Tyler.
I think I'm getting off subject, just Carlton.
But you heard what he said. He's the only one in Arkansas.
I know. Yeah. I know. Texas Monthly once, and I thought this was a good way to judge it. Where does the South end? They did it on the county courthouse that was the furthest west that had a Confederate memorial on it, which I thought was a good way of doing it. But back to food and wine. Food and wine. Yeah.
So it's not just about wine. It's the intersection of wine, lifestyle, food. It's how it all comes together. So
yeah.
It's a strange discipline. You know, you're in the field figuring out how to grow something, but you're also in the restaurant or in the shop trying to sell something. But all levels of income. And so it's a really, I don't know how to describe it. It's a three-dimensional process of trying to see the industry at all levels and at all access points, and becoming a spokesman for that and an expert to talk on it.
Yeah. Well, I'm a firm believer in letting the experts guide you. Being somebody who loves food, I have always gone by, the old saying in the classic restaurants in New Orleans, they know you're a tourist if you ask for a menu. Don't ever ask for a menu. Tell the waiter to guide you and what's good tonight. So let me walk into Saracen, Ken, and I'm going to say food and wine both. I want you to guide me tonight. What you're going to have to ask me some questions, what I like, price point, so forth. What kind of questions are you going to ask me at that point?
Well, if you're not used to dining, if you're not used to being in that environment, we're going to try to put you at ease and make sure you feel welcome.
Yeah.
Because, people who are not used to going to fancy restaurants often feel intimidated, and we don't want that. We want you to feel like this is your place. So we try to put you at ease and get to know you a little bit, and then we'll start asking you questions. And if you have no dining experience or whatever, I might start asking you, like, what kind of coffee do you drink? Mm. I mean, it's crazy that if you took the population at large and divided them up into three or four groups, you'd find out what kind of coffee everybody drinks. And if you figure out what type of coffee they drink, you can find out what type of wine they're going to enjoy. It's just this. It's a constant. So either you like black coffee with no sugar, that's a red wine drinker.
Right.
A tannic Cabernet. Or you like your coffee you like your cream and sugar with a little coffee. That's your Moscato.
Your sweet.
Right? Mm-hmm. They like light, delicate, sweet wines. And it's a physical thing. It's the size of the taste buds and the number of taste buds you have. Right? If you like sweet, delicate wines, you have a lot of taste buds and you're very sensitive. if you're the red wine drinker, you've probably been smoking cigars and drinking whiskey. And so you probably like lost a few of those taste buds over time. Right?
And I drink my coffee black.
Yeah, me too. I'm an old newspaper man. The older it is, the better. You know, the thicker, the better in a newsroom.
Right. So there you go. And so once you figure out like what people are with their coffee, if nothing else, then you can start a conversation about what type of wine to get them on.
Okay. And
so we stay within their ballpark. But we then would look at the food and try to understand the food. If you're going to have a steak, you know, what are the components of a steak? It's salt, fat, texture.
Mm-hmm.
You need a wine that's going to hold up to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we look for a wine that's structurally sound, that's not going to disappear. Because if you're paying $50 for a bottle of wine and you're paying $50 for a steak, you want to taste both of those.
Yeah.
We threw him for a curve, too, though, when the Japanese granted us a Kobe beef license.
That's right.
Right?
Yes. That's
so
right.
One of only 38 in the whole country.
38 is all.
That's all.
Yeah. So you had to get to know that well.
It's A5, yeah. It's rare to use that in a restaurant setting because very few restaurants actually sell it.
Yeah.
And so it takes a while to figure it out because you don't want that big Cabernet with A5 Kobe.
A5.
You really want that Kobe to shine. And so you're trying to find a wine that marries with it. And for me, that's going to be a Burgundy. The Burgundy, because it's a cooler climate and it has a lot of acidity,
gotcha.
But it's still a red wine and has delicate.
But you don't want that big wine.
Exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because we really want that Kobe to shine through that experience. And so having a lot of Burgundies helps us with that, right? And those are hard to get in Arkansas, by the way. Burgundies are like one of the most difficult things to get for us.
In his arsenal, I am constantly amazed. I walked in the restaurant the other day and one of the great things about wine is that the large format bottles are named after folks from the Old Testament. So you have, you know, Nebuchadnezzar's and Jeroboam's and you know them all by heart, I'm sure. But I saw, of course, everybody knows first growth Bordeaux's.
Right.
You know, they're the most sought after wines in the world, Chateau Margaux, Chateau Lafite Rothschild and the like. I saw in the window of Red Oak in the wine cabinet, double magnums. So that's four bottles in one of I think it was Chateau Lafite.
Chateau Mouton.
So we're looking at first and second growth, four bottles in one. I mean, outside of the cellar at the Elotion and maybe a few private individuals.
You're not going to find that in Arkansas.
You're not going to find that in Arkansas, period. And Ken's just got it there when you walk in. So
not going to find it much anywhere in this part of the country.
Arsenal available to him in the back.
We had to have that brought in. And you know, large formats are by design for celebration. You know, so when you're celebrating, it's
the big bottles. Yeah,
but practically speaking, a wine ages better in the larger the bottle.
Interesting.
So it's a little of both.
Well, and you and I shared a friend in Mississippi, Shafiq Shamoun, Shamoun's Rest Haven.
Oh, absolutely.
So my family's Lebanese. Of course, he was Lebanese.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago.
Ate their breakfast about every morning for 4 years.
Oh, he always had Fox News on.
Oh, absolutely.
One side was a diner and the other side was Lebanese food. It's
such
a phenomenal restaurant. My family's Lebanese. And I remember years ago being in Las Vegas and being smitten with the idea of Lebanese Bordeaux. And you know what Ken brought in? Lebanese Bordeaux.
Chateau Mussar, one of the great wines of the world. People don't know it. From the Baca Valley in Lebanon.
Wow. They still have unexploded ordinances in the field.
You have to be careful.
Come to Pine Bluff and drink Lebanese Bordeaux.
There we go. Unfortunately, guys, we're out of time.
No.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure, really.
And Carlton, thank you for coming back. This has been great. First time I've had wine on the show, actually.
Well, don't let it be the last.
I'm going to have to definitely have
We can
back.
Be the official wine sponsor of Southern Fried.
Yeah.
Invite me back. I'll bring you something else.
Yeah. Ken Litzmeyer is at Red Oak in Pine Bluff. Carlton Saffa, the chief market officer for Saracen Casino Resort. I'm Rex Nelson. Thank you so much for joining this wet edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.